Welcome to the EO Business Podcast. I'm your host, Lynn Padetti. In today's episode, we have a very special guest, Scott Stein, co-founder and director of Brasco, a prominent packaging company based in New South Wales. Scott will be sharing with us his insights on how he successfully grew his business alongside his father and brother and the strategies they employed to compete with industry giants. Join us as Scott reveals the secrets behind Brasco's transformation of their business model, allowing them to establish a stronger point of difference and avoid the common pitfalls of competing solely on price. I'm certain you'll find his story fascinating and valuable for your own entrepreneurial journey. And let me tell you, Scott's humility is truly inspiring as well. Now, join me in welcoming Scott. Okay, welcome to the show, Scott. So great to have you here.
Great to be here. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's so good to, I got to meet you when we were getting training up into a forum moderator. And so I realized straight away that you're like a family man as well. But look, let the audience know a little bit about yourself and about your family business as well.
Okay, cool. Let me just firstly say that the only reason why I'm doing this is because you thought it was a good idea. Because I loved your energy and the vibe that I got from you in our moderator training. Well, she's really cool. And if she thinks I can do this, I'm going to do this. I'm not doing this because I love talking about myself. I love talking about packaging. I reckon it's boring. So just so everyone knows that at the start. I'm got a packaging business. My dad, my brother and I, we started about 15 years ago. It was pretty much born out of the idea that my dad felt there was a lack of innovation. He built up a really good business that he sold to Busy, and he stayed on for 2 years, and then he sort of saw the way big businesses operate and all that sort of stuff. And he's just like, there's a good opportunity here. And the other thing, which we'll probably touch into a bit later, was the fact that he sold corrugated boxes. He manufactured corrugated boxes and he built up this great business, and everybody came to him and say, oh, can you do this other packaging? Can you do this? And like, our supplier's hopeless and all this. So he had this concept about being a complete packaging solutions provider. So that was the idea. But my background, other than that, was grew up in the Shire, then moved to the Gold Coast for about 5 or 6 years, then moved to Brisbane. I did a studied at UQ, commerce economics degree. And then I was in sales. I was a really good salesman. I worked in IT and finance, made heaps of money, but was just, something was lacking. You know, it was like every month you'd go back to zero and it was just commission based, start again. And I just always wanted to get in my business. So I was always really entrepreneurial and wanted to start a business. And it kind of aligned, because when my dad sold his business, he was only 60. Back then, 60 seemed old, actually. But now you just say only 60, right? Yeah. And he's like, didn't want to retire. So then we like, oh, let's put this business together. And then got into packaging. And everyone was like, packaging? Because I worked in cooler industries, like I was sales in IT and finance. And some of my mates were like, what are you going to sell boxes? That's hopeless. So then we got into Brasco, our business. And then other than that, I've lived in Hong Kong and China for 5 years with my wife. We did heaps of travel. And then got two kids, got a daughter who's 4 and my little boy, JC, who's turning 2 in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. That's amazing. Okay. So with your, you started the company from scratch with your father when you started Brasco. So you had no background in, packaging at all?
Nothing at all. So my father and my brother, so we each own a 30. So what happened was, I just always wanted to get into a business. I didn't really care what it was. And my dad was like, you know, what am I going to do? And so because of his contacts, he'd been in that industry for like 30 years. And so we just felt it was a good fit. My brother had worked at places like Qantas and IBM, like big businesses. I was like the hustler, the sales guy, and then my dad had all the knowledge and the experience in the industry. So we kind of just said, let's do something in this space. So it would, you know, I think it really was a perfect intro to starting your own business, because I'd had this father who had all the knowledge and the contacts and everything, and then I had sort of my brother there with some of the big business processes. I can't give myself too much credit because I did start from scratch, but I had a lot of support, you know.
Yes. And so because of your dad's contact, is that the reason why I've seen so many amazing brands on your website? Like, I even recognize a new non-alcoholic brand, Naked Life, that I have started buying from the supermarket. I can see Shine, that's you know, one of our members. So I guess, you know, can you share some experience on how to bring all these brands in? You know, okay, maybe he's got the contacts now, but how did he get those contacts in the first place, so that we can learn how we can work with the bigger brands?
The bigger brands, yeah. So we obviously we're not a big, massive business. So we operate, our target market is more the SMEs. However, sometimes a big company, a big brand, can still have a packaging or a requirement that is not a big packaging requirement. So that brings in some of the smaller guys. So for example, like we've supplied to Procter & Gamble, you know what I mean? Like, because the packaging that they needed, they didn't need a huge amount of it. And we had the supply chain and we had the model. So we do supply to big companies and small ones. How do you get the brand? I think, now we don't do any lead generation because we're so busy. We're just getting referrals from our customers. So generally speaking, like the Naked Life one that you talked about, like that came from a referral, and they've actually become really good clients and actually friends of ours. But I think if you were starting from scratch, like, and it wasn't a referral, it's just the old fashioned way of just sort of hustling, cold calling, all that, you know, and then you sort of chase and then you get a lead and you get in front of them, and then you just sell the story and the vision, give us a go, why we're better do it than the bigger guys and all this sort of stuff. And then it kind of just flows on from there.
You know, gotcha.
With help and referral and stuff.
Makes sense. Okay, well, talking about the bigger guys, what was that challenge that you wanted to share with us today around how to actually compete with these big guys?
Yeah, so what happened was, our business evolution was, first 5 to 7 years was just rapid growth, right? Starting from zero, and we got up to about $10 million in revenue in that period of time. And really, that was just off the back of passion and, you know, because we're business owners and we just ripped in and we sort of got into it. And then we sort of hit that point where we're like, okay, what next? So we then decided we need to expand our supply chain. And how we did that was by importing. So we started like making some inquiries into Asia and we started importing a bit. Did that for a couple of years and it was just really difficult doing it from Australia. So we made the call. We needed a presence over there. So I moved over there. So my just got engaged. Said to my girlfriend or my fiance, we're going to Asia.
Is this China or where did you go?
Well, it was China, but I was like, but we're going to live in Hong Kong. Uh-huh. So she was excited because she'd had a friend who was up there and everything. And I think for tax purposes, it was a better base to be out of. And our factories in China are in all different parts of China. So even if we based ourselves in China, there was still going to be a lot of trouble within there. Mm. So we did that. That then expanded our supply chain. So I was there for 5 years and then came back. And that gave us the ability to go in front of a big potential customer. And we had more options than the bigger guys had. So the bigger guys might beat us on a plain brown box or something because it was just cheaper to make in Australia. But then if that big guy, that big customer are like, but you know what, we're having problems with this, so we want something here. We're like, yeah, we can get that for you. You know, we've got a supply chain out of Asia. So that kind of is what got us that first step in, our foot in the door, was that we can now get in front of some of these bigger guys through some of these other smaller products or unusual packaging products.
Mm.
And then, do you know what? You know, once you get your foot in the door and you start building a relationship, things come from there. So it possibly could be, hey, you know, we're getting those boxes from the local guy. Yeah, their lead times are crap or something. You know, can you help us with this? And then it kind of just kept evolving.
Okay, so this challenge didn't sound too challenging. Was it as smooth sailing as you made it sound to be, where you just started? And then now things are going.
Not at all.
So, a little bit of that struggle.
So it was like, I'm going to go over to Asia. I'm going to be there for 2 years, set up the supply chain, and then I'll come back. Right? Easy. And it ended up being 5 years because it's like, okay, you can find a factory, but it's not until you've dealt with them about four or five times that you really know how they operate, how they understand you. When you say this, you need this, and when they say this. So it cost us a lot of money and a lot of time by going down paths that ended up not being what we thought it would be. And those errors and those mistakes, we had to cop them because we didn't want to then obviously pass those down to our customers. So it was really hard. And as everybody knows, China's a big place. So getting around, like it was a slog. So I checked my passport when I was coming back. I've been over to China like over 100 trips to different parts of China, probably 30 different cities. And it was just hard because, you know, you're driving around, you get in the car and you go here and then you go to a factory and it takes you an hour and a half to get to a factory. And then you walk straight and you go, what? This is not what I wanted. So there was a lot of those errors that happened, you know, to get to the point where we were satisfied with what we'd had. We say to people now that maybe 15 years ago when we started, having access to a supply chain out of China was an asset. It's not really an asset now because people can just jump on Alibaba or whatever.
Yeah.
What it is, our asset is that it has been over 10 years of hard slog, vetting suppliers, reliability, continuity of supply, and the fact that you're getting through to me here in Australia, who has put all these years and years of experience, that it just turns up, it's on time, it's reliable, and it's all about. That's kind of really what the asset is now.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so with these industry players, big guys, are they annoyed at you? Are they just leaving you alone doing whatever you're doing? Or is there some sort of collaboration? Yeah, where is it?
You know what? They're annoyed, but they don't go too hard on us because about, I don't know, 15 years ago or something, it was kind of when we first started our business, there was a ACCC case between Visy and I think it was Amcor at the time, where there was collusion. So this was all public, obviously. And and they were basically the two bigger guys in that industry, in corrugated box industry. I think they had about 87% of the market share. They were colluding pretty much so that they couldn't, they could eradicate competition. Right.
A monopoly problem.
Yep. So that's what, and they got busted. And ever since then, there's a sensitivity there. Do you know what I mean? So when we say get in front of a big customer that we may be pulling away from the bigger guys, obviously they can compete and come back and all this sort of stuff. But no, we're pretty lucky. We're not getting targeted.
Okay. So it sounds like, you're keeping your own lane and people coming to you for that kind of, like a smaller boutique feel, even though you still can mass produce things. But is that what's really making, like, you're kind of like infusing with that small business mentality, but yet you're helping the bigger clients?
That's it. So it would be that. So it would be like, so why would someone want to go with me over the bigger guys? Firstly, because when I walk in the door in front of that person, it's my business, I'm the owner, and I'm going to be more passionate and enthusiastic about that business and about keeping the business. So they get that versus the sales rep from whichever company it is, right, that walks in there who may not be there in 2 years and all that sort of stuff, right? So that's probably the first thing. But really what the second thing is, and this has probably been when you're talking about competing against the bigger guys, the first part of that was getting that supply chain. But then the second part of it was about innovation and being different and having a different business model or a different sort of approach. So what we then had to do was, if we get in front of a big account, say they spend $1 million a year in packaging. Now that's an account that the big guys don't want to lose, right? So I get in front of them and they're like, cool, we want to deal with these guys versus them. Ultimately, at some point, it is still going to come down to the price, you know, like, because if they can beat our price by 20%, that's a $200,000 a year saving. And that's where the rubber hits the road, where the customer goes, I like you better than them, but is it worth $200,000? And it becomes like a really hard decision. And we learned a few tough lessons where that happened, where I was like really enthusiastic, but we've got this. And then it was like the other guys just were 20% or something cheaper. So then we started going, I'm like, what else can we do to have a point of difference? And so what we now do as part of our business, apart from the fact that we can offer all packaging products and it's convenient and all that sort of stuff, we've aligned ourselves with other suppliers and other contractors that work in and around the packaging space, right? So people that like, say, automation, transport, graphic design, structural design, these types of things. So anything that kind of touches the packaging. And so what we're doing now is we'll go to them and we'll say, and also like, tell us about your transport. Who do you use for that? Or that design that you've got on that bottle, that's maybe getting some different ideas for that. Yeah. And these types of things. And like, how many units do you get out for this? How long does it take you to pack that product and get it out? Have you thought about any packaging automation equipment? And so then what happens is we're expanding out the offer into more things. So that when I go back with a proposal, and it could just be on the packaging, if it was in that instance where it was like the boxes were 20% cheaper by the competitor, what I've also got in my arsenal of goods is, but I've saved them $70,000 a year on transport. I've given them this new design, which is going to help them grow more sales. And we're sort of now rounding it out. And that's kind of been probably in the last, like since I came back from Hong Kong, which is 3 years ago, that's been the sort of next innovation in what we're trying
to do. Yeah.
Because really our goals, we've got big goals. And the only way we're going to get to that is we've got to be able to win on some of those big ones, because we're now competing in that space. And so we've got to have more things that we can do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'm going through that with my business as well in the last couple of years. It's like you really just can't think singly and niche in that thing anymore, because at the end of the day, people come for because they have a problem, and the solution is how do we transform them? And it needs so much more. So in terms of those other areas that you advise them to, do you white label and you kind of include it in your service, or more it's like more of a adding value by referring to the partner? Like, how do you include all that?
So the commercials and the invoicing of that particular service still comes through Brasco, but we're very transparent about telling the client that it's not us doing it. It's got strategic partners that will do it for us.
Yeah.
So it'll be like, to say if it was like, so say if it was just the graphic design element, we'd say to them, you know, we've got these guys that work with us, they're awesome, and they know packaging and they know how we operate. And then, so then they'll go, yeah, cool. So then we'll go, here it is. And then they'll come back with maybe three different concepts that they'll show them. And so the partner is always involved in this. So it's very transparent. But the idea being that through our network, we've brought these guys into it. And whatever these guys are going to charge us to do that service, it's going to be cheaper than if they went to that person, because we're doing
it. Yeah,
but the business and all of the commercials are still coming through the Brasco business.
Yeah,
so it's like it's still our client.
Yeah, that makes sense, because the client trusts you and they know that it's all connected to you, and you guys are all, you know, you're friendly with each other. You know how each other works. As we wrap up towards the end of this episode, I'd like to know about your dad. So your dad, he was about to retire at 60. So how old is he now? And is he retired yet? What's happening with the
He is 75, and he comes in twice. So he retired. He stopped coming in about a few years ago because my brother and I were right to run the business. So we're like, sweet. And then he got to a point where he was like, I'm a bit bored. I'm going to come in. I think Mum was getting him to do a lot of chores around the house too. So I think he's like, oh, the boys need me to come in. It was like, no, we didn't. You just didn't want to do chores around the house. And so he comes in and he just tinkers around. He just looks at the bank account, looks at sales, and just annoys us. Just says like, why haven't we got the money from these guys? What is it? So he's just got enough knowledge to be dangerous and to be a pain. But anyway, no, but I love him. He's he's very wise and he knows a lot. Having him around for that.
Would you kind of count on him as an advisor, someone that just knows the knowledge, but not to day-to-day running of it, obviously?
Yeah. Look, it's funny that we're talking about this because I was just talking to someone about this yesterday, and it's very rare I talk about this. And they were saying, what's your dad's level of involvement? And I was just saying that the business is completely different to when he started it. So operationally, he's not really someone who I would rely or, you know, go to say, hey, we're doing this, because it's a completely different style of business to what it was when he was. Where his advice comes in is like, just some of those things where you might be like, customer's warning this, suppliers are saying this. Some of those line ball calls, and he's just got a very clear ethical and clear level of thinking to go, no, well, if you do this, you've got to do this, you know. And part of the success of our business in the early stages was built off my dad's reputation and his name in the industry. Everyone just was like, it's really honest and good straight shooter. And so, so that's really where I was.
Okay. Well, my last question to you is, I guess, you know, ultimately, you know, what do you want the world to remember Scott for? With all these things that you're doing in business and all?
Everything that I have wanted to do in my life has been about changing the status quo. Like, I always just look at things and go, why do we do that? Like, what's the reason for that? And it's like, oh, because that's how it's always been. So what we're doing with Brasco is, like, when we started as a non-manufacturer, everyone's like, you can only get so big, you know, because once you get to a certain stage, like, you know, you can only service only the smaller guys. And we've changed that. Like, we've got big customers. So I just want people, like our staff and suppliers and customers, I just want them to just feel like I've changed the status quo, rattled the cage up. We've transformed. We've made people think differently about how things can get done. And we've, like, broken down, you know, restrictions and barriers and all that sort of stuff. And so hopefully that'll be it. And then I can apply that concept to a lot of other things. And then I can also tell that to my kids as well. And they can take that as well.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much, Scott. I've learned so much because I can kind of relate a lot of your stories with my husband's business. So he also has a manufacturing business with his brothers, you know, and in manufacturing. So there was a lot of resonance there. And I just really enjoyed your concepts around, like, staying unique and caring about what you're delivering so that you can compete with anybody, you know. It doesn't really matter. So thank you so much, Scott, for your time.
Thanks,
I'll make sure that your details and descriptions are in the video below.